Hello and welcome to the Right Does Rumble podcast. As truthful as resources permit, my name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
My name is Jazza, and the highlight of my week was taking to Twitter during the first episode of RuPaul's Drag Race UK, a combination of two of my favourite things in the world. One of them, my British identity, and the second of all being drag and general queerness. It's a beautiful melange, I must say. I went to try and find the conversation that was happening online, a traditional use of the world of Twitter that I understand doesn't really happen nearly as much as it used to. But nevertheless, I did log on. I found a favourite of the podcast, Tom Harwood, tweeting about something that some nobody said in a speech in Germany and how it was really bad and how Ramoni and blah, 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 blah. And I took great pleasure in responding to him and saying, nobody cares. We're all watching Drag Race UK. It got two likes. So, you know. But I felt really good about it.
Well, that's what really matters.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about me, me, me.
Jazza, why do we meet every so often to shoot the breeze?
Oh, are we having an existential crisis? We meet every week or so to talk about...
Well, after that intro, I thought we were just going to discuss Tom Harwood, to be honest.
Welcome to every episode. We meet every week to talk about politics, social issues and current events. Jimmy, what will we talk about this week?
Well, we're going to start off with the tone in the House of Commons.
Great, good, excellent.
Because people have been complaining the tone is too thin, it's not full-bodied enough.
What is this, a wine?
It's not, hasn't got the low ends that people are looking for, hasn't got the mid-range. It's a little bit too, too tinny. That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I hit that metallic taste in my tone.
Exactly. I mean, also people have been getting death threats and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, in case you missed it, is being blamed for the descent into this negative tone that apparently the House of Commons currently has.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was him, but after Parliament was recalled, after the unlawful prorogation...
Importantly unlawful.
It was actually Geoffrey Cox, the Attorney General, who made the first sort of speeches and said the Parliament was a disgrace, it had no moral right to exist because they won't go to a general election and they won't affect any sort of Brexit outcome. But Boris Johnson in particular was criticised for using the phrase surrender bill.
Mm-hmm. And humbug.
He said humbug in response to a question about Joe Cox and mm-hmm. whether the rising rhetorical severity mm-hmm. was leading to a climate of violence and fear.
And then over the period of about 3 days, I ended up thinking about the meaning of humbug more than I ever have in my life. I thought it was just something that was in the Christmas Carol.
It is very Dickensian. Mm. It just means bollocks, basically.
Yeah. Load of rubbish.
If he actually had said bollocks, which...
would have been worse.
Yeah, but it is the Lib Dems' main slogan these days, bollocks to Brexit.
Yes, but isn't in response to somebody talking about an assassinated Member of Parliament.
Yeah, but humbug is... Yeah, okay, we can discuss this later down the line. We don't want to get drawn into the weeds.
Mm-hmm, excellent.
What else has been happening in Boris Johnson land?
Oh, he has a new deal that he has proposed. So it technically isn't a deal yet because it's not been okayed by the European Union, where he is proposing removing the backstop, which would keep Northern Ireland in any kind of a customs union. Would keep the whole of the UK in a customs union if something isn't sorted out in Ireland, is essentially what the backstop is. Oh my God, do I not know what the backstop is after such a bloody long time?
I don't think I know what the backstop is. Which is a bit of an impediment to this discussion we're about to have.
The backstop, devoid of us being able to come to any kind of arrangement that decides either a custom union or like a free trade deal.
At the end of the transition period.
Which would be two years. We would end up being stuck in...
a perpetual customs union.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. That would then be in... like, the EU would control whether or not we would exit from said customs union.
They'd have to agree to it.
Yes.
Yes. They'd have a veto over it.
Boris Johnson and his peeps don't like that. And so he's decided that there isn't going to be a backstop anymore, and instead there's going to be checks not on the Irish border, because we don't want to draw a line on the top along the top third of the island of Ireland. But it's going to happen in warehouses, and it's going to be kind of like a non-linear border, or whatever people
are. And at the same time, Northern Ireland will remain in the single market, so follow all the...
with the European Union.
All the regulations therein, but Great Britain, which is
the big island. Britain, that's it.
Yeah, that will be outside the single market, and this will be voted on every 4 years by the Stormont legislature.
Yes, which hasn't actually sat in nearly 2 years.
I think it's the administration, the Stormont administration, that hasn't sat. I'm not really sure what the... I should have looked at other details to this.
No. It's being governed from Westminster now.
It is, but is it? Does the chamber itself, the assembly, doesn't sit if the two main parties can't agree to...
Correct, yeah, right. Which is part of the Good Friday Agreement.
Okay, so it's
that
not...
pesky piece of legislation and that peace agreement that is making this whole thing very complicated.
Among other things.
Among other things. Secondly, we're going to turn our eyes to the United States of America, where Elizabeth Warren... How do we feel about Elizabeth Warren?
I'm generally pro-Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, interesting. We will talk about that later. She has a proposal to break up some of the big American tech companies, namely Amazon, Google, and Facebook. The CEO of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, a tape has been released of him saying that if Elizabeth Warren became the president of the United States and enacted said proposed policy, she would then Facebook would then hit the mat to try and avoid being broken up in the way that she proposes. We're going to talk about that policy and how we may or may not feel about it.
Indeed. Full disclosure, Jazza currently works for Google.
Yeah, and used to work at Facebook.
Correct.
Never worked at Amazon though, so break those fuckers up as much as you like.
And lastly, we are going to be discussing Rory Stewart, who I think it's fair to say was our favourite Tory leadership candidate.
Yeah, I mean, low bars.
Low bars, but he was our favourite. He did a lot of walking, which I think...
A lot of going live on Twitter.
Yeah, we're both in favour of those things, I think it's fair to say. and he was anti-no deal, and he was in favour of coming to some sort of sensible, you know, moderate arrangement for us quitting the European Union. And was vilified for it. He has said that he won't be standing as an MP in the next general election. He's instead going to seek the London mayoralty. I'm not sure how you say that.
Mayoralty. Not morality.
Morality. Mm. No, there's no morality in London. He's going to try and become the mayor of London as an independent candidate because he's no longer part of the Conservative Party. I think he was one of the MPs that had the whip withdrawn, one of the 21.
Yes, he was, because, to be fair, he's a man of morals.
Yeah, not enough morals to not join the Conservative Party, though. Zing.
Zing? Question mark?
Nick Matzy isn't here, so can't target him.
Going to be talking about today, in the meantime... Here's some music and us begging you for money, as per. Hello, dear listener, Jazza here. This is just a reminder that we are a 100% user supported podcast. We rely on donations from listeners just like you in order to keep this podcast going, because there are certain overheads with producing a podcast, like hosting fees, equipment, and of course our precious time. If you would like to help support us to keep this podcast going in such trying times, then please go to our Patreon, patreon.com/rightdishonorable, and you can pledge to support us there for as little as $1 per episode. We really do appreciate it, and it means an awful lot to us. Thank you so much to everybody who's already doing so. So now that I have begged you for money, here is the rest of episode 100 and 44.
Jezza, do you actually think there is a link between the rising rhetoric, talks of betrayers, traitors, surrender bills, and the death threats and general abuse that MPs receive on social media?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I, of course, have no empirical evidence to back this up, because I don't have the resources to carry out such a study. But
I'm not sure such a study is really possible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, welcome to the social sciences. But I think it is, there is an argument to make that when tone and civility descends in kind of like, I mean, this is thrown around a lot, but the mother of all parliaments, then it is...
I have to say it's England that's the mother of all parliaments. It's not Westminster.
Okay, all right, fine. Jesus.
It's a necessary pedantry.
It's
I
not.
Think.
It's
we can't
not
let that sort of mistake stand.
Oh my God, you're the absolute
worst. It's like the
worst.
Boiled frog fallacy.
Why? What happens with the boiled frog fallacy?
Well, you know the cliche that, you know, this is like a boiling frog, i.e., if you throw a frog in boiling water, it will jump out immediately. But if you slowly turn up the temperature on a frog that is in boiling water, mm-hmm. it will boil to death. This isn't true. The frog will jump out in either scenario.
Do we know that?
Yeah, scientists, psychopathic scientists have tested this mm-hmm. to be the case.
But I really like that metaphor, so I'm going to continue to use it.
It is a good metaphor, but it is false, basically.
I think that the tone that happens, seeing the Prime Minister, who is, to a certain extent, and I think historically as well, kind of is meant to rise above it all in terms of tone.
To some
like,
degree, yeah.
The Houses of Parliament is a place, it's one of the more raucous kind of like legislatures in the world. Well, like people internationally will have seen Prime Minister's Question Time, for example, and it is full of like jeering and yelling.
You
and
say
all that.
That
kind of
I
stuff.
Mean, PMQs does have an international reputation, but is it really worse than a lot of other legislatures? There are full-blown punch-ups in some assemblies.
In Italy, yes.
Italy, I mean, Ukraine, I think, has mm-hmm. seen them. Turkey.
I actually had a coffee with an Italian, and he was like, you know what? It's really nice to see another European country take up the baton of the worst parliament in the whole continent. And I was like, you're welcome.
I'm like, Italy, you're still terribly governed.
Yeah.
There is nowhere we're dropping down to your shitty level for a very, very long time. We've got a long way to go.
Yeah, Jimmy, I'm not sure that we're able to throw stones in that glass house right now.
I don't know. I think this is something that Westminster journalists put about. And I think if you do the comparison, I'm not really sure it stacks up, you know.
Going back to the tone in the House of Commons, I think that we've never really seen the Prime Minister get down and dirty with the rest of the backbenchers and the rest of the people who question him. I don't think we've seen somebody descend to that tone, at least for a long time. In our lifetime, certainly not.
Not since I've followed politics, I think it would be fair to say.
Yeah.
But that's only as far back as the Brown era.
Yeah.
So
I think you can make the argument that it gives people permission to therefore be more ruckus. I don't think that people necessarily are going to be more violent or more combative in public life. But it's certainly... And I felt this, I was... recently in a really Brexity part of the country, out at the pub with a friend of mine, and I didn't want to talk about politics, because I was like, I don't want to have
where is this part of
Cornwall.
The country? Cornwall. Okay. And you thought that would happen?
I was like, I don't want to test whether or not it will.
I think people...
And it's me, for goodness sake. I'm a bloody nightmare. I'll have an argument with absolutely anybody.
People are far nicer in person, though, than they tend to be on the internet. People say the most awful things on
yeah,
social media.
Yeah, this was an interesting thing that I think... who was it? There's a Remain-y group that did some surveying. It wasn't a poll. Did some surveying of their members and found that they were they were worried about like expressing their opinion, but almost all of the abuse that they got was always online rather than in person. But it did affect my, I found it affecting my behaviour and having me at least double guessing whether or not I was going to talk about something in public. And it is partially, maybe it's because of the media framing of the tone that was in the House of Commons, but it was certainly something that affected my, maybe it's because I'm a fucking snowflake.
I think people are just het up about it. It's not, the problem is not the language being used, it is the strength of feeling, and the language is just an expression of that.
Mm-hmm.
And when people say that they feel, when people call like Remain leaning MPs traitors, the problem is not that they use the word traitor. The problem, in as much as there is one, is that they feel those MPs have betrayed them in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that the sentiment is there. So you can dress that up in nice words, you can say that in more polite ways or ruder ways.
But that language starts in the establishment and then trickles down. At least that's my impression.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's
Do we
true.
Have any evidence either way? Shall we both put our cards on the table and say that there isn't?
I haven't seen it, but it probably exists.
Because my experience of it is seeing it in newspapers and seeing it said by politicians, and then people using it in real life in abuse, rather than the other way around.
What is definitely true, or at least is reportedly true, is that MPs say that in some of the abuse that they've received since that session returning to the House of Commons, is that the people abusing them actually quote phrases that people like Boris Johnson have used. So they
Surrender Act.
Surrender Bill, I think it is. But yeah, they use that sort of language, which, I mean, people copy stuff that they read or hear in the media, so that's not that surprising. But you wouldn't do so if you didn't already kind of feel that way anyway, I don't think. So just because that people are parroting language, I don't necessarily think that it means that tensions have been inflamed by what it is that politicians have said. It's just that, you know, people have views on things, and it's given them a language that they can use to express themselves, but
yeah,
it hasn't made them feel those things fundamentally. I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of it. There's also the, like, I think that seeing this kind of language makes you end up kind of like fall very much on kind of like either partisan side as well. And so there were criticisms on both sides. But then I was trying to kind of like think about the metaphorical use of words like surrender bill and all of those kind of things. And actually, I think I agree that you should be able to use that kind of metaphor. I don't think surrender bill is necessarily actually the worst thing that has come out of many people's mouths. And it was the fact that it was the Prime Minister who said it that was the major kind of like spark to that, right?
Yeah, well, it's been pointed out that David Lammy, who's a Labour MP and a Remainer, literally said that some leavers were not just Nazis, but worse than Nazis, which was obviously a totally retarded thing to say. Mm-hmm. And
don't use retarded.
And I doubt he even believes it, to be honest. Like, I think if you genuinely like interrogated him about it, I don't think he ultimately would believe that. Mm-hmm. So there are instances of people using het up language that doesn't really reflect what they think. Yeah, I mean, this is just sort of the state we're in, is that we've reached a stalemate and people are now shouting at each other.
Do you think it's special that the Prime Minister is down there and getting dirty with everybody? And descending into, maybe not descending into that language, is maybe a little bit of a hyperbole.
Well, I don't think surrender, you know, I mean, people talk about like collusion. Oh, was it appeasement and collaboration? Like, someone said that collaboration has associations with like the French regime.
Okay.
And it's like collaboration is just a word. Yeah, that people
I think I think I might agree with the use of stuff like surrender bill and stuff like that. Like, I don't think it's actually very good. Do we want to address specifically the use of the word humbug?
Yeah.
Which in this case does not mean a yummy little sweet.
So you'll have to remind me what the. So Boris Johnson was asked something by the MP who replaced Joe Cox, who was murdered just before the EU referendum.
Mm-hmm.
I actually can't remember her name. And she said that, what was it? Do you remember what the question was exactly?
Oh, like it was talking about death threats that she, whether or not the tone in the chamber was going to kind of like affect...
increase the likelihood of death threats being made. And she also made some reference to the memory of Joe Cox. And then Boris Johnson said in return that it was humbug. Her argument was humbug, mm-hmm. not the mentioning of Joe Cox per se, but he doesn't, but I mean, he sort of takes the position I take, but it isn't actually true that the language used in Parliament increases the risk of death threats. And then he also said the best way to honour the memory of Joe Cox is to deliver Brexit, which...
I have more of an issue with the latter than the former.
Yeah, I mean, that, at the very least, is tasteless.
That's... Yeah, it's fucking tasteless.
But, you know...
I cannot imagine how you, even on the fly, in the whirlwind of Prime Minister's questions, how you can come to the conclusion that saying that delivering the thing that Joe Cox was against is the way of honouring her memory. Like, I think that is... that makes me think very viscerally, how dare you? What a cunt.
You need to tone down your language. So.
I don't care. Like, go out on Twitter and call Boris Johnson cunt if you want because of me. I don't care. At me in it.
I think it was bad, but, you know, given that Boris Johnson is currently being accused of giving, you know, more than 100 grand's worth... sorry, yeah, 100 grand's worth of taxpayers' money to somebody he fucked, in the scheme of things, not that important, mm-hmm. I don't think. I don't know. I kind of take the view that the reason people are using that language is because of the frustration. And to some degree, I guess it does feed certain... I don't think they should do any of this. Like, if you want to bring people on side, the way to do it is not to hurl abuse at them.
To be nice, innit?
Yeah, it's to be nice.
That's how I'm glad for getting you to come back over to Remain.
And to try to understand their point of view. Mm-hmm. And
it's working really well for both of us.
Well, you know, I guess the friendship has endured. So,
yeah. And yet we persist.
I mean, this is actually something weird that came up. Is I was listening to a podcast with Ken Clark, who is a Ramona-in-chief.
Oh, he's the best.
And he was saying he actually got on quite well with Nigel Farage, which, given Clark's stance,
I can imagine that.
Remaining,
I think they're pretty similar humans. They're two sides of the same coin, don't you think?
I don't know. I guess it wasn't that surprising, but just given how opposed Ken Clark is to, like, to us leaving the EU. Mm. That was surprising, I think. But that does show that, you know, people can come together across the divide.
I think also if you're in politics, you're used to knowing people who you disagree with along very, I mean, literal partisan lines.
You're used to coming into contact with them, but...
a lot of them are friends. Do you not remember the band MP3?
Yeah. But I wonder how many MPs take the Laura Pidcock... was it Pidcock? Pidcock or Pidcock, who said, like, she wouldn't be friends with a Tory MP. She's a Labour MP. I wonder how many of them take that view.
I think increasingly, especially on the Labour side, they don't. They would take that view, sorry.
You mean they would refuse to...
yeah, there's
friends.
All of this language around, like, you're a scab if you fuck a Tory, for example.
Never kissed a Tory.
Mm-hmm. I've ruined a couple of Momentum members' clean records there. Hey.
Was this just a...
hit me up, boys.
An inroad to brag about your conquests.
This conquest.
I mean, you said a few, so...
and I'm also not a proper Tory. I just joined it for a joke that got out of hand.
In light of, you know, this language about, you know, the obvious entrenched mm-hmm. divisions, what is the likelihood... that people would ratify Boris Johnson, sorry, Parliament would ratify Boris Johnson's proposed deal
mm-hmm.
that we've already outlined.
This is one of the things that I've been thinking of. So this is his deal to replace the backstop with kind of like it would be like a demilitarized zone of the island along the border of the island of Ireland, basically.
Would it be?
Well, in that it just makes the border fatter.
In a way?
In a weird way. If you're going to draw lines on a map, then it just kind of like increases the size of the line.
Well, my inference from it is that it means that in terms of travel, you'd still have to go through border control. And then you would, I mean, yeah, there's no border control in there now because it's part of the common...
No, so border control would be, there wouldn't be any for kind of like individuals, but goods there is.
Right, okay. So,
but all of the goods checks happen away from the border. So actually it means that there are multiple borders, perhaps either at the manufacturers where the goods are being moved from. So before they can even leave, say, the factory or the farm, they would have to go through checks before they even left the premises so that it doesn't have to happen on a physical border.
I mean, that doesn't sound that bad in principle.
It sounds really overly and unnecessarily complicated. And I can see it being a huge problem for Northern Ireland businesses. It becomes less of a problem for Northern Ireland people and individuals.
Well, I think the main...
I think this one affects business more than...
The backstop.
The backstop, yeah. The backstop is actually very pro-business, whereas this is not.
The main problem I can see is that the fact that these arrangements are contingent on Stormont voting them into existence every 4 years or maintaining them every 4 years seems, I mean, given how little they can agree on, this was actually something that an Irish businessman said when he was being interviewed by the BBC. He was like, they don't agree on anything, so the chances of them actually voting this for every 4 years are, you know, tricky.
Which is one of the things that just makes, I do not understand, so the DUP, who are the only representatives of Northern Ireland that actually sit in Parliament, which is nuts on its own fucking merit, because they're crazy and do not represent the views of, safe to say, a majority of Irish people.
Well, this is because Sinn Féin refused to sit.
There was in... Let me give you a history lesson, dear listener. Since kind of like the 90s, there was an increase of third and fourth and fifth parties in Northern Ireland that were getting elected not only to Stormont, the local assembly, but also to
Westminster.
So you'd had the, for example, the SDLP, who are kind of like a Labour-aligned version of kind of like the Northern Irish parties, because they... British parties don't sit in Northern Ireland for like various kind of like historical reasons. We saw an increase in those parties in the run up to 2015-17. We got to 2017 and saw it revert to just Sinn Féin and the DUP, who basically are the two representatives of the old troubles, the two sides of the old troubles that Northern Ireland have.
This is in terms of people sitting in Westminster, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So we had the UK-wide election in 2017, and rather than have kind of like a multicolour of parties returned from the Northern Ireland constituencies, it reverted back to only two parties winning all of the seats there, Sinn Féin and the DUP. Sinn Féin are special in that they do not see Westminster as a legitimate place to have power over Ireland, so they don't sit in the seats. And the Democratic Unionists are homophobic, anti-abortion nutjobs. And so the only people representing all of the people of Northern Ireland are the homophobic nutjobs because of the wonders of first past the post.
It all comes back to first past the post.
Give me any essay and I'll bring it back to first past the post.
Okay. But the DUP are on board with this deal, right?
Yeah, who are not representative of the people who are actually going to be affected by this.
No, but... That's sort of surprising given how opposed they are to any sort of moves towards differentiating Northern Ireland from the UK in terms of their political arrangements or trading arrangements or whatnot, and also moves towards integration with the rest of Ireland.
Well, this is what I don't get. The DUP I do not understand how they are backing this deal, because the DUP backing this deal and the success of this deal and the future of Northern Ireland as part of the UK, which is a really clear part of the DUP, kind of like, it's their raison d'etre, it's why they even exist, is ingrained in the idea that they are going to be able to get a majority instalment every 4 years to be able to agree that Northern Ireland should stay aligned with the UK rather than with the European Union. And that just isn't... That's not the reality that exists in Northern Ireland at the moment. And so the only thing that I can... The only... like, if you game plan this out, the only thing that I can think of is that they just know that there is no way that this is going... that this deal is going to be a reality.
So how firmly have they backed this deal?
They were at a Conservative Party conference going around and speaking on panels and saying how good it was.
Right. Okay. So you're sure that they're just assuming it will fall through then?
No. I ain't spoken to no one.
That's your interpretation of what's going on here.
That is the only thing that my poor weak brain can come to.
I mean, it doesn't seem all that plausible that Ireland and the rest of the EU are actually going to agree to this, because
no, of course not. This is all a dance.
Yeah. So Donald Tusk has said that he's
the other Donald.
The other Donald. One of the other Donalds. Who's the president? He's the president of which part of the EU is he president of? He's one of the EU's many.
Why
presidents.
Why must you always ask these questions that throw up that we don't actually know what we're talking about?
He's a bigwig in the EU.
He's the president of the council, is he not?
The council? Yeah. I don't know. But he said that he's unconvinced by Boris Johnson's proposal.
Right. He is the head of the council.
Which, I mean, and also that he, you know, the EU will back Ireland's corner in any conflict of interest between Ireland and the UK, which is reasonable, given that Ireland's remaining part of the EU.
It's almost like being part of the EU can actually be good because you've got 25 other states behind you anyway.
Blah, 20, blah, blah. 26 at this point.
At this point, yeah. What are we doing?
So, yeah, the it doesn't seem like it's going to go through. So, you know, I mean, we said this before. I don't really see what Boris Johnson can change about Theresa May's deal. You know, when Theresa May managed to agree that deal with the EU, the EU said, this is the deal. It's not really going to change at all. Maybe there could be some minor fiddling here and there, but fundamentally, that's what they're offering us. And Boris Johnson is presumably going to take this back to Parliament at some point, and he's going to say that, you know, well, he's going to take back the deal that Theresa May negotiated, because I don't think he's
no
actually going
to
get these changes.
There's no way that this...
You mean...
So there's a couple of things. So this is just a proposal by Johnson.
Hmm.
It needs to be passed by Parliament, is unlikely.
It needs to be agreed with the EU, first of all, which I don't
agreed
think...
Agreed with the EU
I don't
first,
think is going to happen, but let's say it did happen.
Which is unlikely to happen. It's got to be passed by and approved by Parliament, which is unlikely to happen. Before the 31st of October, which is unlikely to happen. Now, we have just today, we're recording this on Friday evening, we have just today gotten confirmation that that Boris Johnson is going to write to ask for an extension to Article 50.
Well, the court, there's a Scottish case ongoing, which is trying to confirm that Boris Johnson will ask for a extension to our EU membership, which is due to terminate on the 1st of October. This is as was mandated by the Benn Act, which is also called the Surrender Bill, if you're keeping up with us. Some campaigners don't trust Boris Johnson to do so, so they've taken the government to court to force him to do so or to gain some assurance that he will do. And in the court documents that have been thrown up, it said that he would do. Mm-hmm. There's been some briefing from Downing Street people that maybe this isn't quite what it appears, and it just means that it will follow the letter of the law. But you know, that's what it says. And I, in some ways, I don't really see what other option he has. So if it gets to October 19th and there's no new deal on the table or no deal has been voted through, I think he has to ask for an extension, basically.
Now, Jimmy,
as a representative.
of the 52%. How's it going?
It's been bad, to be honest. It's been bad.
Oh, I'm sorry. I disagree with you, but I don't want you to be sad.
The ridiculousness of it is that the deal is what it is. So if Parliament doesn't want the deal, it can either accept no deal or it should somehow engineer Remain. Obviously, the primary method of doing that is via a second referendum. But I just think I have objections to a second referendum and to Remaining that I've kind of laid out before, which aren't really contingent on me having voted Leave. I would still think it was wrong if I voted Remain.
You can't know that.
I can't know that, but I think that's probably the case. And so I at this point I'm like, well, we have an option to leave with a deal, which, you know, would enter us into a 2-year transition period at minimum. And then there'll be more negotiations, or we can leave with no deal, and then we immediately have to start negotiating for arrangements, further arrangement with the EU going forward. It just seems to me that Parliament has conspired to keep us in a stalemate, basically. And Boris Johnson is kind of involved in that. Conspiracy is the wrong word, but, you know, he's involved in that in as much as he's not offered any productive way forward. He's just kind of insulted people and booted people out of his party, MPs, that is. And he's, you know, everyone is fucking useless.
You're a Theresa May fan, aren't you?
I'm not a Theresa May fan, but I was sympathetic to the position that she put herself in through her, you know, major strategic errors. And so towards the end, I was like, well, you can vote, you know, if you think the decision should be respected, but you think no deal is a disaster, which is what a lot of Remain-leaning MPs do say publicly, then you should vote for the deal. But most of them didn't, as far as I can make out. So
there you have it, the voice of the 52%.
I mean, how do you feel as the voice of the 48%? Which is still less than 52%. It's worth reminding.
Well, I mean, let's look at some of the polling and see where the public opinion is at the moment. So,
how was the polling before the referendum? Was that good for you?
Yeah, well, we won't know until we have another referendum, will we?
Well, no, I'm saying that before the first referendum, it looked like Remain were going to win and they lost.
Yeah. So. I think that the Supreme Court ruling, and I don't think a lot has changed since the Supreme, there's been a lot of heat, not a lot of light, since the Supreme Court ruling. That is the definitive moment of the past, like, couple of weeks. And it opened up the field to a lot more possibility than was possible before that happened. So it was getting narrower and narrower, and no deal especially was getting more and more likely. And then all of a sudden, everything kind of, like, some possibilities came back onto the table.
I actually think that's wrong. I don't think it fundamentally changes the situation.
I think it makes the 31st of October deadline less likely to happen. And past the October 31st deadline, I think more things come into play again. Be that an election or another referendum.
I think Parliament had basically blocked a no-deal Brexit on the 31st of October before they were prorogued. So I don't think them coming back has changed that situation. But because the Benn Act was part,
you are right that that kind of like definitive field opening point was...
MPs have done other non-Brexit related things since they've come back to the House of Commons, but I don't think it's changed the situation on Brexit particularly. And I mean, at this point, I think Johnson is obliged to go and ask for an extension. I think he will have to do so. I don't think there's any way out for him other than resigning, which I guess he could do, but I don't think it would be useful for him.
He's very full of ego. I will be honest, I'm kind of like emotionally detached from this, mainly for my own sanity.
the trauma has become too much.
Yeah, so my body has just shut down. And I'm more along the lines of now... It is just so curious. It's so out of my hands. And until it gets put back to the people, then I can feel there being kind of like this big surge to try and do stuff again. But at the moment, I'm just like, what the bloody hell are you guys doing in that building that's falling apart?
I think at this stage, this is one of my major criticisms of the second referendum. I just don't see what it would solve. Like,
it would just get us past a line, whatever that line is. It gives legitimacy to whatever comes next.
I don't think it does. I think if Leave win again, all the same arguments that were made against the first referendum, that Remain, hacked the vote, that they misinformed voters, which will happen again for sure. That it's not something that should be put to voters in the first place. All of them still apply. There's no way of engineering a second referendum that doesn't have those. I mean, even if you have a referendum that says deal or no deal as two options,
mm-hmm.
you can still say people are misinformed.
But I think it is different because both of those are real actionable things. And I say this every bloody time, Jimmy, and I'm annoyed that you haven't listened to me. Well, it gives you, you are voting on a defined version of Brexit. You know exactly.
For a bit.
It's like, essentially a manifesto rather than the, hey, how about we just change it?
I mean, I've only realised this recently, but actually you're totally wrong about that. In that,
you curious man.
Deal or no deal are not endpoints. They're actually just staging points for the next stage of negotiations. Therefore, they are not concrete manifesto proposals. They actually don't mean a great deal long term. So,
No, I think that's weak.
Say no deal. No deal tells you nothing about the relationship going forward.
That is a really good point. But at least you know what the next step is. And we cannot get past the next step.
Yeah, but I don't think...
at least Parliament
I don't think a referendum might move us past that next step. I'll give you that much. But beyond that, I don't think it means a great deal.
Yeah, but I don't think that people will really...
care.
Who the fuck am I kidding? Shall we move on to Elizabeth Warren? Because we've been talking about this for a really long time.
Too long. Let's move on to Elizabeth Warren.
So Elizabeth Warren has a particular policy that is listed on her website as... How can we break up big tech?
Big tech.
She is proposing that, and the three examples that she uses are Amazon, Google, and Facebook. Facebook, for example, owns Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, which are, could be argued, competitors, which then
they're
reduces...
They're all social media networks, I guess.
They are all social media networks, but they are all ways of kind of like they used to compete against one another, and now they are all kind of like owned by the same entity. You also have Google, for example, that owns companies like Waze. You could even argue YouTube and DeepMind are companies that have worked in spaces that Google originally worked in. YouTube especially, Google used to have its own video service and then it purchased YouTube, and Google's video service was then
Google
deprecated.
Video, that takes
Google
me back.
Video, yeah, those were the days. There's also the problem that these platforms are then also performing as players on, as kind of like parts of that market. So, for example, Google, Waze is... integrated into Google advertising and Google search, so that it's prioritized.
This was something that Google got in trouble for
in the EU.
That they were prioritizing their
Google Shopping.
Was it shopping? Wasn't it?
I think it was shopping searches. They prioritized Google affiliated shopping links.
Yeah. When you search for something, those links would come up. Mm-hmm. against other links.
So there is a history in the United States and across the world of companies being broken up by governments for the sake of competition, so that it is better for the consumer.
One of the main examples would be AT&T, which was the telephone network. So they broke it up into like regional networks. Although a lot of that doesn't really matter now for various reasons, but mm-hmm. at the time they were considered too big.
This has been, as we said, criticised, or like Mark Zuckerberg has taken off the gloves and he has suggested that if she were to come into power,
it would suck, quote unquote.
Quote unquote, and they'd have to hit the mat.
Which is probably a judo reference. Yeah.
No, he doesn't do judo, he does jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Trust and believe.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a bit more like Punchy than Juno is.
It's more like Mask.
That doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay. Sorry, I'm being gay. What do you think about Elizabeth Warren's proposal?
So Elizabeth Warren has two proposals for solving the situation you've outlined. One of them is like reversing mergers or acquisitions such as Facebook
buying WhatsApp. Having Instagram or WhatsApp.
Yeah. That kind of makes sense to me in a way. The second one is to turn things like Google Search specifically into a neutral platform, which would mean that any service that participates in that platform can't be owned by the runner of the platform. So it's like a neutral exchange type thing.
Mm-hmm. Which is similar to European Union competition law.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. If you say it is.
It is. It's similar to European Union competition law.
So it's the idea if you're running the rails, you can't run the trains, basically, which probably doesn't work.
Hugely. It doesn't. It's a terrible metaphor. Move on.
Yeah. but that's the rough idea. And that does make sense to me because I think that a lot of the concerns around Google's behaviour, I actually don't really think are to do with the end consumer, at least not directly, because some monopolies, and you know, Google is kind of a monopoly in terms of search. There are other search engines, but
you don't use Bing
or DuckDuckGo
or Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves, RIP. Mm-hmm. Google is a great search tool, and it has been really well developed, and it continues to be really well developed, and it is good for the consumer. Mm. And yes, there are problems. You can argue about kind of political bias and them delisting things or prioritizing things in kind of skewed ways, which skews our view of the world. But mm-hmm. you know, given the nature of the search engine, that probably would be a thing, whether or not, you know, however big or small Google was. I don't think that, by and large, you could make the same argument about Amazon. Amazon is a great service in terms of the consumer. You can buy super cheap products. Mm-hmm. You can get it delivered super quickly. I don't think this is a pro-consumer argument. And I realize that Warren is kind of pitching it that way because consumers are the people who, by and large, are going to be voting for her. But
it's a business argument.
It's a business argument, as far as I'm concerned. So, which you can say indirectly affects the consumer. But
an example of the way that Amazon competes in this is that they will see products that are selling well and then offer their own service.
Yeah, so this is something that she keeps bringing up. There's also this whole thing, which is, as a journalist, is pertinent to me, in that Google probably rakes in a slightly unfair share of revenue from like listing news articles and that sort of thing, which deprives the industry that, you know, traditionally made a lot of money out of advertising, newspapers, from collecting that same revenue. So I think there's a lot of weight to that kind of argument. Broadly I'm on board, even though I think that the benefits to a consumer are probably indirect rather than direct.
Mm-hmm.
And
who is this policy for?
I don't know, because I mean, it is kind of, does anyone personally feel wronged by Google? Like, is that a company, difficult for you to say because you work for them, but like, I don't feel personally wronged by Facebook. I feel that like Facebook in some ways is negative because I think it has too much power and it has too much influence over like how advertising operates, in particularly because it has such a huge share of the advertising, or it's involved, has such a huge influence over how digital advertising works. But I don't feel personally wrong by them. I don't feel personally wrong by Amazon either. Like,
I think I'm thinking more of who is this policy positioned towards? Who is she trying to get votes from with talking about this policy so much, actually?
She's talking about a lot.
Mm.
I don't really. I mean, it's, so apparently, I was reading in Vox. Silicon Valley.
They're fine.
Do you not like Vox?
Oh, they're not very. They get ranked very lowly on accuracy, don't they? They make very nice video. Though.
Let's
go on.
Let's move.
Let's
par-
move
let's
on.
Move
yeah,
past
you were reading
that.
Something in Vox.
I was reading something in Vox, To be fair, I've read articles about stuff that I know about and have gone, yeah. It's kind of like a left-wing American magazine anyway, but or website, I should say. It said that a lot of Silicon Valley workers, so like your programmers and like your mid and low-level like tech workers, support this policy.
Mm-hmm.
They're generally on board with it. Mm-hmm. The people more skeptical...
Hello, that's me. And not that I obviously can't say whether or not I support that policy, but I fall into that bucket of somebody who apparently, according to Vox, should like this policy.
And the upper levels, actually, they support Warren because they consider her to be less bad than Trump, who is considered to be incompetent. Mm. But there is a level of scepticism about the policy, I think. Just because, well, it's not in their interests, for starters. You know, if you've made a lot of money out of the tech surge, and monopolies are good for the people that control them. That's why monopolies exist. It's an obvious point. But, you know, you're obviously going to get some level of resistance around that, I think. But I mean, the thing that's kind of mysterious for me is the previous targets of Elizabeth Warren are like the financial sector, the big banks. They're a much more obvious enemy, I think, than big tech. You know, there's something just inherently unlovable about finance, and also the fact that during the financial crash, so many people like in America lost their houses because of the impact on the mortgage market. And
but I think that I think some of this is reactive because of the tape that was released of Zuckerberg, which, yeah, that was a mistake.
So the tape was of him doing an internal Q&A with Facebook staff, mm-hmm. right? And apparently he's much more, I mean, I haven't actually heard the tape, but he's much more relaxed in that than he is in general interviews or congressional hearings, for instance.
Yes. As somebody who has as somebody who's watched those meetings, that is generally the case. Because generally people don't leak them.
Yeah, so this one was leaked, and then he did a follow-up one, which was publicly broadcast mm-hmm. deliberately, where apparently he was again more relaxed and more chilled out. So I forgot where I was going with this.
So where I was going was that some of this is reactive to that tape,
yes.
But also some of this is... these are household names that we know a lot better than we do the likes of Merrill Lynch, Barclays, Bank of America, I think, anyway.
I think Zuckerberg is more famous than most financiers.
100%, exactly. And a person versus a person sells so much better than a person versus a corporation.
I think that's fair, yeah. I think...
And it makes sense. And so I'll answer the question that I asked you.
No, I failed to answer.
Yeah, you did. It's fine. I won't hold it against you, and it's not the first time it's happened. She's targeting us. She's targeting kind of like educated millennials.
Oh, you think I'm educated?
Sorry. You have your moments. but people who think about this kind of stuff, who are aware of stuff like Cambridge Analytica, who have read The Guardian maybe a little too often.
Sure, I mean, but surely if I haven't looked into this, I'm kind of assuming here, but if America is similar to Britain, if you're a university graduate, millennial, or like young, somebody who's under 30, or maybe just 30, for instance.
Oh, fuck you.
if, you know, you're probably going to vote Democrat anyway. Whoever is picked as the candidate, uh-huh. right? If it's creepy Joe Biden, or if it's Andrew Yang, or if it's Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, as she's sometimes known,
mm-hmm.
you're going to vote Democrat. So why is she targeting these people when they're already in the bag? Do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. I also think it's a really risky strategy.
In what sense?
When it comes to the actual general election. So if she were to win the nomination... She's doing really well at the moment. We're still months and months out, but she's doing really well at the moment.
So it's probably worth saying that right now it's all about Democrats cornering, like, Democrats, people who are registered to vote in the Democrat primaries.
Yeah, right. It's Democratic voters. And there are some open primaries, but it's Democratic voters who are deciding who is going to be the person who ends up going and running off against
generally you would Trump. You would lean left in that scenario. So the whole thing in US presidential elections is that you lean towards your base during the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
So right for Republicans, left for Democrats.
Mm.
And then you have to lean towards the middle. This is the old thing.
Yeah.
During the... So...
I feel like if this were a flagship policy going up in a one-on-one runoff against Donald Trump...
The Trumpster. The Donald.
He doesn't need nicknames, mate.
The Orange Man.
Okay. Well, yeah, I like that one. I think this loses the election for you in terms of the voter of kind of like the affluent, socially liberal Democrat who thinks that, well, at least as long as there isn't a recession in the next year or so, I think that this could damage her in kind of like affluent, Republican-leaning, but socially liberal areas. The kind of people who voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger to be the governor of California, for example.
Right. I mean, more.
But also, all she needs to do is win all of the same states as Hillary Clinton, which frankly is not that hard for a Democrat, and then get the Rust Belt by being union-y.
Okay.
And so if you're thinking about like tactics and thinking about like breaking up big business and supporting the unions and supporting the new economy and investing in infrastructure and stuff.
But if you're a working class man or woman in like the you know, the Appalachians or something, or you know, you're just in kind of a downtrodden area of the US, do you really look at a candidate and you think, what I really need them to promise is to break up Amazon? That's what really needs to take place.
No, but what is still powerful in specifically those parts of the US are like the equivalents of unions in those communities. And so it's like similar to kind of like northern industry towns, the importance of kind of like not necessarily an endorsement, but positive noises around a particular type of policy, like something that breaks down.
So you think that monopolies might, in the minds of the voters that you think she should target,
it
will translate well.
Yes, it would, but it needs to be translated.
Right. Okay.
Because frankly, the breaking up of Google does not affect people in the Rust Belt.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That wider policy has a resonance that goes beyond just the tech industry.
What do you make of the fact that Facebook is also accused more widely of like corrupting American democracy, which we're sceptical about, but is a narrative, as people say?
It seems to be working in the US. I think that's a narrative that works really well within media and within political discourse.
Right.
So you know how I feel about it.
Yes. But you think that appeals to the sort of people that believe in that?
Yeah. Narrative. People, I still have conversations with Americans who are like, Facebook lost Hillary the election. And I'm like, no, that was Hillary.
Yeah. What happened? That was a reference to a book.
Great.
Speaking of what happened, what is happening?
No, terrible segue.
That was a great segue. What is happening to our boy Rory?
Our boy Rory. Yeah. Well, he's not going to be an MP anymore, bless him.
He still currently is an MP.
But the Tories aren't for him.
No.
And he's going to run as an independent candidate for the London mayoralty.
Morality.
Who knows?
I know how it's spelled.
Can you use it in a sentence?
No. I've tried several times.
I'm going to go right out and say it. I think he could do really well.
Yeah, well, the Twitter opinion, or political Twitter, was initially quite negative about it. But, I mean, if you look at it this way, the Tories are running Sean Bainley as a candidate, who is a...
Oh, he's terrible.
He's a working-class black Londoner.
Working-class, terrible Londoner.
Who's, I mean, previously been embarrassed over some fairly reactionary views, should we say, about easy girls, let's say, and, you know, crime.
That terminology was on you, Jimmy. He never said easy girls.
I mean, that's the sort of terminology he would use, you know. Mm-hmm. He wrote in a paper for the CPS or a think tank or something, about his time as a social worker, that he would advise like people, you know, he'd advise boys from going with like slags basically, and he'd advise girls from going against like boys that were falling into crime and that sort of thing.
Don't choose slags, don't choose chavs.
Something like that. Yeah.
That's a great slogan. I should work in politics.
I mean, there's been other stuff that's come up, but he's seen as quite a slightly reactionary figure for London, which is...
Yeah, you know, and he's the Conservative candidate.
Yeah, seen as this liberal, you know, diverse city.
He's a Cameroon... What is he?
Well, he originally came up under David Cameron. He was an advisor to him for a little while.
Mm-hmm. But apparently did very little work. So Rory Stewart is separating himself from that. What do you reckon his chances? In the election system that exists in London.
So the election system in London is a runoff vote in that you get
similar to the French presidency.
You get a first and a second preference. So in the first round of voting, the votes are cast for whoever you put as your first round. If no candidate reaches more than 50%, it then goes to a second round. All the second preferences are totted up, and then you see who wins after that. Which means it's slightly more proportional, I think, than a straightforward first past the post system. Or the equivalent. So I think he's, you know, if you're a conservative-minded Londoner, Rory Stewart is potentially a more attractive...
If you live west of Westminster.
West of, you know, is that where all the Tories live?
Yeah.
I think, you know, for me personally, out of the main three candidates, Sean Bailey, Sadiq Khan and Rory Stewart, I would vote for Rory Stewart personally. If that's some sort of endorsement, which I don't know if it is, but... You know, he just seems to be a more sensible person than Sean Bailey.
And you wouldn't vote for Sadiq Khan?
I personally think that Sadiq Khan's a blowhard, but a lot of it's around his Remainer messaging, and I just think that as the London mayor, I mean, well, Rory Stewart, to be fair, Rory Stewart wrote a letter to Londoners, dear Londoners, in the Evening Standard, where he did reference Brexit, but I'm sort of assuming that Rory Stewart will probably reference Brexit less than Sadiq Khan has done as London mayor. And I think if Stewart did do it, it would be in a more conciliatory, less Ramonery way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There's something I find annoying about Khan, which is totally irrational. But at the end of the day, this is the thing. I actually don't think the
he just isn't on my radar at all.
What's
and
Sadiq
maybe
Khan?
It was because of national politics. He's just kind of like taken over everything, but I haven't seen him comment. There was nothing about him around the Labour Party conference.
That's true.
It's definitely true. It's strange. Seems very quiet.
He's probably been sidelined by the Corbynites to some.
But then he still has the ability to like advertise on the Tube and all of that kind of stuff. So things that actually Boris Johnson, when he was mayor, did really well.
Well, Sadiq Khan for a long time did. There were adverts for like Mayor's Question Time with Sadiq Khan.
Not anymore.
I haven't seen them for a while. You have to bear in mind, the London mayor is basically a glorified transport commissioner and everything else.
And
is,
housing. A little bit of housing.
Everything else is shepherding the councils, which...
And a little bit of an HS.
The councils... It would be untrue to say the councils dislike each other, but the councils very much enjoy having their patch and don't necessarily want anyone encroaching on that. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a thankless job, I think. In that sense, I don't think Sadiq Khan's done that badly. You know, he's blamed for the crime spike, which I doubt is very much to do with him, to be honest with you. But he is also a figurehead for London, and I would personally prefer Rory Stewart to be that figurehead. So,
really, he's got a weird grin.
He does have a weird face. I will give you that.
Okay, shall we end?
Are you not going to say how you'd vote?
I don't know. I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
Okay, what is it about?
So in the last London election, Sadiq was my second choice after Caroline Pidgeon.
Okay. Lib Dem candidate.
Love a Lib Dem. And I love a Lib Dem with a surname, Pidgeon. I would be tempted by Roy Stewart. I think he would be really good, like the ambassador side of things, of being the ambassador for London. I think it's something that London misses under Sadiq Khan. Sadiq isn't very visible, I would say, at least to me. And I think actually that's one of the main roles. When you take away transport commissioner, you can get somebody in to do that. And actually, Boris Johnson probably took to the job in the way that you are intended to take to the job. Or in the best way that you can
Boris
take to
Boris Johnson,
the job.
When he was London mayor, appeared on US chat shows and that sort of thing.
Yeah, because it was the Olympics.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. That was why.
But that is more of a brand ambassador thing that you're.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, like maybe it's because of that that the memory of that time of like the London Olympics, that I think of the London mayor as being kind of more of this ambassadorship role that we get to vote for. And I think that out of all of those people, Rory Stewart would probably be the best out of those main three. I don't know an awful lot about the rest of the candidates.
So you won't be voting for the Makeweed Legal Party? Which was a party. It didn't have quite a name.
I interviewed a candidate for them.
Oh, right.
The Hackney South candidate for them.
Oh, I see.
In 2015.
That's good.
Fake fan.
So that's a non-committal from Jazza.
Yeah,
that's,
I don't know.
But I'm following the story closely.
I'm
firmly behind Roy Stewart for the time being.
Excellent. But we both like Elizabeth Warren, and that is an endorsement.
I mean, I like Andrew Yang as well. So. Do you not like Andrew Yang?
I find... I want there to be more research on...
Quite into his flagship basic income.
Yeah,
policy.
Like universal basic income, I want there to be more research into
I'm not fully convinced that policy works, but I also don't think if he became president that he'd be able to implement it, so...
Great, that's the only thing he stands for, Jimmy. So what the fuck would... Thank God we don't have a vote.
He also skateboards.
Oh, you're the worst. You're the worst. You would be the worst kind of American voter. Thank you for listening. I'm wrapping this up. Thank you for listening to us. You can find us at Right Dishonor on Twitter. And you can find me at Jazza John and Jimmy at JDE Nichols. Jimmy's Twitter game has been really good. If you don't follow him already, do go and do so.
There you go. Jazza is old and wants to go to bed. So we are finishing this.
Oh, how did you know? Okay, bye.
Bye.